This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
This is your current affairs program, The Rainbow Report, on Joy 94.9.
Thank you, Rob, there for the news. Yes, that's not as bad as it is sometimes. I've been called Dog on air before now, so I'm quite used to it. Yes, this is Doug Pollard with you once more with another program of news and current affairs with a queer bent. Around this time of year, the meaning of life seems to boil down to a lot of dreary songs, bad haircuts, curious dance routines, and vast quantities of satin and fireworks. Yes, it's Eurovision time again, and don't we love to revel in the campery of it? This year, Eurovision is taking place in Moscow, just ahead of Idaho, the International Day Against Homophobia. So for Russia's gay community, it's an opportunity to demand their rights while the world's media is watching. Slavic Pride are planning a parade through Moscow on Saturday and have invited all the gays and lesbians visiting Moscow for Eurovision to join in. Activists from the USA and Britain have already said they'll be there. Tonight we include a special extended interview with the organiser of Slavic Pride. This is the fourth attempted gay pride celebration in the Russian capital, Mr. Nikolai Alexeyev. Back here in Oz, it's been announced that the next census will, for the first time, count same-sex couples who've married overseas as married couples. Jenny Telford, the Director of Census Products and Services at the Australian Bureau of Statistics, will be joining us to explain why. Now, lending me a hand tonight and making her Rainbow Report debut, we have Claudia Larson, who's the Sales Manager at Evolution Publishing. Hello, Claudia.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine. Don't be nervous. It won't bite. and nor will I. I'm too far away from you.
Okay. I feel safe now.
good. Plus, as always, the thinking man's diva, Kay Sarah, who this week has been thinking about rugby players.
Yes. Not altogether nice thoughts. Thank you, Doug. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. And you're looking very well, dear. Now, strangely enough, our first guest tonight is a rugby player, a guy called Ben Lankey, I think that's how you pronounce it, but correct me if I'm wrong, who's putting together a Melbourne gay rugby union team. Now, he could use some help from you and some ideas. San Francisco has the Fog, Sydney has the Convicts. What do you think would be a good name for a Melbourne gay rugby club? Maybe the Fairy Penguins? The Fed Squares? Well, give us your ideas. Let us know. I must say, he doesn't look much like a fairy penguin. Ben, I have to confess, I haven't played rugby union since I was forced to at school, and apart from the communal baths afterwards, I hated every minute of it. I'm guessing you see it a bit differently.
I do. Well, I've been out of rugby for a little while now. Back when I was in high school, I was involved quite heavily playing, coaching and refereeing. Since then, moving from Sydney down to Melbourne, there's not as much rugby union down here, and sort of moving around a bit with work has meant that I haven't been able to play as much as that I'd like to, and I figure now's the time to get back into it and to get a team together here in Melbourne.
So what level did you play at when you played?
I mean, I was playing at schoolboy level. Mm-hmm. I was coaching junior level, so I was coaching the Mighty 14Fs, if any of them are listening today. And I was also refereeing at quite a high level as well, so...
So you're a bit of an expert all round.
Well, I like to think myself as an expert. Yeah.
Now, why do you think a gay rugby union club would work in Melbourne? Because I mean, we're pretty much an AFL town.
You are an AFL town, and that's the struggle. When I first started talking about this, I was in a pub and I said, "What do you think about a gay rugby team?" And they said, "Ben, if you can sell a gay rugby team to men in Melbourne, you can sell ice to Eskimos." So here's the challenge, and I'm putting it out there now, and that's why I'm here tonight to talk about it. So look, there's a Sydney team. There's teams all over the world. There's an international gay rugby association. The trail has been well and truly blazed before me. So with a lot of support that I'm getting from the Sydney club already, the Convicts, and with support from a lot of other people, we think we've got a good chance of getting a team together and getting a group over to the Bingham Cup in Minneapolis in June 2010.
That should be good, Kay.
Yes, Ben, I know a little bit about AFL, but now with rugby, what's the objective of that game?
Okay, so the objective of rugby
no,
is...
No, I really... It involves a ball and a whole lot of fellas running
ball.
Around.
It does, yes. Yes. Yeah. There's two ways of scoring points in rugby. One is scoring a try, which is when the player runs over the far line and puts the ball on the ground. That's called a try, and that's worth 5 points.
Well, it's not really a try. If they've managed to get the ball there...
Well, for some reason it is, yeah. They have succeeded at scoring the try.
That's score, right.
Yeah.
Score a try.
And then once you've scored the try, you've then got the opportunity to shoot for a conversion, which is when you do, like AFL, shoot the ball through the two poles and over the horizontal pole as well.
Oh.
That's a difference between rugby union and AFL.
And then you get some more points.
That's right. And then you take your shirt off and run around. Like
Now that sounds
now
that's,
like... Now we're getting down to the nitty-gritty.
Have you had much interest so far? I noticed there was a piece in the gay press this week.
There is, actually. I've been very surprised. The interest so far has been incredible after the article in MCV. We've just launched a Facebook group as well, which is getting a couple of hits. And the phone and email have been running hot. So there are a lot of guys out there that are interested in playing and supporting in any way they can. And I'll mention now that we're not only looking for men to play, we're looking for all sorts of people, from young to old, men to women. So anyone who wants to get involved, playing, supporting in any way, we're more than happy to have a chat with you and see how you can get involved as well.
You fancy giving rugby a go, Claudia?
Yeah, I tried a little bit out in New Zealand. I think we only played touch, though. It was a little bit boring. I think rugby.
Well, it's a bit boring. Come down and have a run around with us, and we'll see how you go. At the moment, as I said, we're in the very early stages of recruiting players, and we're looking at people from all different skill levels, for people who have never played rugby before, to those who consider themselves a bit of a pro. And we invite everyone to come down and have a run with us. Even if you've never had it before, we'd invite you to come down and have a run. And if you enjoy it, hang around. If you're not, see you later. We'll meet you at the bar afterwards.
Okay, so when are you having your first get-together? Have you got that organised yet?
The first get-together is coming up very shortly. There's a few things we've got to sort out before that, but it's going to be the next fortnight or so.
Right.
Look out on the Facebook group and keep an eye on your emails. Everyone that's contacted me with their details, you're on the mailing list, and as soon as we get that information, it'll be going straight out to everybody.
So what's the Facebook group called?
It's called Melbourne Gay Rugby.
Uh-huh.
So all you need to do is just search Melbourne Gay Rugby on Facebook, and that'll come out.
Right.
Or you can email melbournegayrugby@gmail.com.
Well, that's easy enough. Well, we'll put that address and details up on my blog page as well, along
Fantastic.
With the details of today's programme, and we should hopefully get you some interest. Now, I made a few joking remarks about the name for this club. Mm-hmm. Have you had any suggestions?
I've had a couple of suggestions. I've had Thunder Thighs, the Rough Riders. There's been a couple. But look, let's open the lines and see if we can get anyone calling up and giving us some more suggestions.
Claudia.
Yeah, we had a little talk about it at work today, actually, and... Nick, who I work with, came up with a great idea called Melbourne Scrum.
Oh. Melbourne Scrum. Definitely worth a look.
Well, definitely worth a look. It's better than fairy penguins.
Yeah. Yeah. You wouldn't want that to become Melbourne Scum, though, would you? No.
Yeah,
no.
You've got to be careful of how you can be teased as well.
That would be a little bit difficult. So if you're going to get involved in this tournament, this World Gay Rugby Tournament, when does that kick off? When does that next take place?
The next one's in 2010, next year in June. It's in mid-June. It's in Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
Registrations will need to be in a fair way prior to that. So we're looking at setting up a development squad to start with, getting a bunch of players who are interested, and seeing if we can get to a level where we're ready to go and travel over there and put a team know, against the rest, I guess.
So you're probably going to need actually more than one team, aren't you? Because you're going to have to have... If you're going to have some people who've never played before, for example...
Ideally, what we need is a squad of 22 to take across initially.
Yeah.
But, of course, if we have more players interested, the more the merrier. The more people we can get on board and who we can get across to Minneapolis, the better. but the idea is to have, moving forward and in the future, is to have a strong team that can compete in the regional divisions here in Melbourne, and also a development squad where, you know, once people with little more experience get to learn the game a bit more, they can filter through up into to the other ranks.
Okay, well, thank you very much for that, Ben. We're definitely going to need a name for this club. So if you can think of any name for a Melbourne Gay Rugby Union club,
just search Melbourne Gay Rugby on Facebook and that'll come out, or you can email melbournegayrugby@gmail.com.
Someone's just SMS'd in and said, where are you going to be playing?
Watch this space for where we're going to be playing. That's the next challenge that we've got with the leadership group at the moment, is working out which club we're going to be playing with. I think the go is to affiliate ourselves with an already existing club.
Mm-hmm.
That way we can take advantage of such things as their insurance and their playing grounds and their club facilities and that sort of thing. Once we can build a relationship there, we'll then be able to join a division and we'll have a better idea of who we'll be playing against. But don't you worry, there'll be plenty of teams out there that would love to give the gay boys a bit of a bashing, I reckon.
Yay. Well, not bashing, just have a chase.
In the rugby sense of the word,
chase the ball and all
well,
of that.
Well, if I remember my days in rugby, there were quite a few gay guys in rugby anyway to begin with.
There is.
Because there were so many public schoolboys, you know, in England who played rugby, and they were known affectionately as the Rugger Buggers.
The Rugger Buggers, yep.
So now there's a name for you. Melbourne Buggers. Is that tempting a fate a bit much for us? Actually, I quite like Thunder Thighs myself. Anyway, thanks for that, Ben. Now, later on this evening, we'll be speaking to Moscow, where the organisers of a gay pride march are preparing for trouble on Saturday. Stay with us for a special interview with Nikolai Alexeyev of Slavic Pride. I find that very hard to say, I don't know. And a chat with Jenny Telford from the Australian Census.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au. Or, if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Keeping the GLBTI community up to date, this is the Rainbow Report.
And you're listening to Doug Pollard on Joy 94.9, bringing you the Rainbow Report. With me in the studio, Claudia Larson and Kay Serra and Ben Lanken. I did get that right, didn't I?
Lanken, with an N on the end.
You've got an N on the end. Lanken. Ooh, it disappeared in your email. Ben Lanken. Okay, now, last week, the Australian Bureau of Statistics announced it would count same-sex couples who had married overseas for the first time. Now, it sounds like quite a small thing, really, but is it? Joining us now on the line is the Director of Census Products and Services at the Australian Bureau of Statistics, Jenny Telford. Good evening.
Hi, Doug.
Now, you're going to count gay marriages for the first time in this census. How is that going to work?
Actually, what we're going to do this time for the 2011 census is provide a count of same-sex couples who identify their relationship as husband and wife on the census form. So in the past, we've only ever released information for same-sex couples on the de facto relationship, but this time we're going to provide a count of how many people have said they're a husband or wife on the census form. And we'll do that for both opposite-sex and same-sex couples.
I can think of a few same-sex couples who've had a little difficulty working that one out as to which one's supposed to be the husband and which one's supposed to be the wife.
Would it not be on the form?
I think you probably need to change your form to just say partner. that I think would be a little safer. Now, what are you going to use this information for?
Really, we're just providing the responses as it's reported on the census form, and we'll make that data available on our website. Really, the data we release from the census is used for a whole range of different purposes, and every Australian citizen has access to that data and can use it for any number of different things. So we're providing this data in response to an information need that's been expressed to us, but I guess once it's on the website, people can use the information freely in any way they choose.
Now, are you going to have any special way for people to identify themselves not as married but as having registered their relationship with one of the state-based registries that we now have?
We don't have an option on the 2011 census form for that kind of identification, if you like. It certainly is something that we will look at in future for censuses, but not on the 2011 form.
So you're doing this basically in response to the campaign by Australian Marriage Equality, really, aren't you?
They've certainly identified to us that there is a need for this information and we're responding to that need. They're not the only group. We've had representations from a number of different groups. Essentially, this data is data we collect on the census form and we kind of have an obligation to release the results of that back to the Australian public.
Right. Now, when is the next census going to happen?
The next census is on the 9th of August 2011 and we hope to release the first results from the census in June 2012.
Right, so you've got plenty of time to get your forms all organised.
It might sound like a lot of time, but there's a lot of work that we have to do between now and then, let me assure you. It's very busy here.
Yeah. Now, you say you already count same-sex de facto couples, so people just declare themselves to be de facto, do they?
That's right. Since 1996, the ABS has released a count of all same-sex couples we identify through the census. So that is couples who identify themselves in the one household. And we've made that data available since 1996.
Well, thanks for that, Jenny.
No problem.
We look forward to seeing just how many people have regarded themselves as married, for example, those who maybe have gone through the British civil partnership ceremony or whatever, because a lot of people refer to that as marriage, even though it isn't. And it's quite interesting that you're allowing people to kind of define it for themselves in this way.
Thanks, Doug.
Okay, thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
That was Jenny Telford, Director of Census Products and Services at the Australian Bureau of Statistics. Well, Yeah. Is this going to make much difference, do you think, Kay?
Well, I think, I would assume that any statistic that kind of identifies people in kind of loving and marriage-like relationships would be a very powerful tool for, lobbying for legislative reform and just, I think, legitimising as well. I mean, because we know in our community that there are people who have been through ceremonies abroad and who do consider themselves to be married. So to have statistics which actually clarify that and affirm that, I would have thought that'd be a very good thing indeed. And I'm sure that the government would be very keen to see the outcome of something like that. I mean, it's a bit of concern.
I'm a bit doubtful about that part of it.
Well, no, I mean, I think that they it's like I can't believe that they're all a pack of bigots. I think they're just waiting for the stats to actually swing in their favour so they can justify any legislative reform. I mean, for some reason they've got into their heads that it's not acceptable and that registering a relationship is enough. Well, for many of us, it's not, and that many of us want to actually have a little bit more legitimacy, I guess, in our relationships.
Claudia, would you consider getting married, or have you got married in New Zealand? Or?
New Zealand? No.
You can get married in New Zealand.
Yeah, exactly. You can. Actually, one of the things I did find funny is when people introduced their wife, it actually was their wife. And occasionally it's kind of, it's just kind of, you have this little smile inside and go, yeah, that actually is. It's quite funny. But, I absolutely would consider getting married, probably in New Zealand. Got half my family there, half here.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I mean, I personally, I don't much care for this registration system myself. I'd rather wait for the real Mikhailovich.
Well, registering is what you do with your pet dog. Get the microchip while you're in there as well.
I think
I used to be very opposed to marriage, the whole concept of marriage, and in particular gay marriage, because, why do we need to ape, heterosexual relationships? But I actually...
But darling, Kay, think of the gown.
You've so put your finger on it. I mean, I just want to wear a wedding dress. Is that too much to ask?
Well, by the time this government gets around to it, you'll look more like Ms. Havisham than anything else.
I've given up on Kevin asking me. He's flirted off with that other floozy from Queensland.
Well, I think...
There's her million-dollar socks.
I think he likes a woman with a little more meat on her,
I think that I'd quite like to try and outdo you for frock size.
Yes. Oh, okay. Fair enough.
Okay. All right. Well, it seems like everyone at the moment is eagerly anticipating the Eurovision Song Contest. Even Joy is having a party. The Russian gay community is also looking forward to the weekend, not in anticipation of a big silly party, but most likely getting bashed and arrested. On Saturday, the day of the Eurovision final, Slavic Pride will, for the fourth time, attempt to stage a gay pride march in Moscow. It isn't illegal to be gay in Russia, but the march has once again been banned by the mayor of Moscow. After the break, a special interview with the organiser of the Pride march, Nikolai Alexeyev. Well, welcome back. Doug Pollard here with Kay Serra, Claudia Larson and Ben Lankin. You heard there an excerpt from the Icelandic Eurovision entry, Is It True, by Johanna. I haven't actually seen the video clip. I don't know if, like the Bulgarian winner a couple of years ago, she's surrounded by a lot of lipstick lesbians, but let's hope so. Now, for some time now, we've been trying to organise an interview with Nikolai Alexeyev, the leader of the gay rights movement in Moscow, but security concerns have made this quite a challenge. His landline is tapped, which means he has to be careful what he says, and he regularly changes his mobile phone because the authorities not only eavesdrop on his calls, they use it to track his whereabouts. So this made doing the planned live interview we promised you for tonight impossible. Even pre-recording the interview was fraught with difficulties. When I called at the pre-arranged time yesterday, Nikolai immediately said this was not a good time. It was impossible, and called back later, and then hung up. But when we finally got hold of him, 2.5 hours later, I asked him what the current situation was regarding the planned Pride March.
Well, just now, an hour ago, I received an official letter from the Moscow government banning the event officially.
Yes.
And so basically it's again banned, and now I'm receiving the papers from the prefecture of the central administrative area, which is also banned the two pickets that were planned as part of this Pride.
Yeah.
So now we can say for sure that it's official denial once again for the fourth consecutive year.
Yes.
And we will have to go on the streets again without any permission.
Now, the British Embassy apparently has issued a warning to British tourists coming to Moscow that there might be trouble. There has been trouble in the past, hasn't there?
Yeah, it's true, and you can understand that this warning of the embassy, it's absolutely right, because the situation on the 16th, especially during the day, will not be very safe in Moscow for even for people from the Eurovision, because there will be many anti-gay protesters who will obviously go in the streets and try to attack people. And there was, of course, a lot of violence in the first and second Pride in 2006-2007, and including famous activist Peter Tatchell, who was attacked in 2007. But still, he is coming here once again for the Pride, and he's going to be with us at this demonstration.
Yes, I understand there's a couple of American activists are coming to join you as well.
Yes, that's true.
Who are these people who are going to turn out and demonstrate against you? I hear there's some kind of anti-gay Pride planned. Who are these people? We just hear them called right-wingers here, but who are they?
Yeah, it's mostly people from the different religious organizations, religious youth organizations, which are under the umbrella of the Russian Orthodox Church, and also some kind of nationalistic organizations which are fighting against immigrants, against all these things like minorities and so on. So these people turn out all the time every year, and we expect that they will again go on the streets this year.
You were going to ask people appearing in the Eurovision programs to show some sign that they supported you. Have you had any success in contacting any of the contestants?
Well, we tried to contact them. As of now, we have the statement from the Netherlands, from one of the participants from Netherlands, who said that if their group goes to final, they will not perform if there is a violence during the Moscow Pride. We're trying to get in contact with others. It's not so easy. But in any case, we already made an announcement that we call the participants and the guests of Eurovision and the spectators of Eurovision to go on the streets with us. There are thousands of them in Moscow now. And to go on the streets with us on the 16th, on Saturday, and to express solidarity and their outrage with the breaches of the fundamental rights.
Yes, because Eurovision is very popular with the gay community. Here in Australia, people are having Eurovision parties and all kinds of things. And of course, there's lots of gay contestants in Eurovision every year.
Yeah, it's true. And this year there is a German contestant who is openly gay, and one of the, as I said, one of the members of the Toppers, the group from Netherlands, and probably there will be others. So it's very well known that there are many, usually, LGBT people who are performing, and lots of them who are spectators and members of various delegations and so on.
Yes. Last year, when the Russian boy took his shirt off, a lot of us hoped he might be gay too.
Oh, yes, but, there are rumors about it that there is no official confirmation, so I know the information, but it's not public, and I cannot tell you this, but I'm obviously sure that he was a sort of exploiting this, of course, opportunity to attract also the gay fans by opening his shirt or something like that.
Oh, yes, of course, we're used to people doing like that, Robbie Williams and all. Now, you just had an attempted lesbian wedding, didn't you? That's made the news all around the world. And I see you made the papers in America, in Europe, and here in Australia too. So that was obviously a very successful action.
This was a very successful action, and I must admit that I even didn't expect that it would be so widely covered all around the world. We had all the major international media during the yesterday's attempt. There was all the main information agencies, the main TV channels, and I know that today the feedback is very positive and very good, and what we try to do is that it's definitely not a male couple, but a female couple, which will bring more compassion towards this issue of legalization of same-sex marriages in this country.
Yes, it's always easier to sell a lesbian couple to a straight audience, I'm afraid.
Exactly. And that's why we decided to go this way. It's the first time ever in Russia that a lesbian couple is trying to do it. And it's the first time that two Russian citizens are trying to do it of the same sex. And we also didn't want to make it a one-day event.
No.
We wanted that after they get a denial, they go to Canada, to Toronto, we have all the contacts there, and that they register their marriage there, and then come back to Russia and ask for its official recognition here. There is a real loophole in the law, which allows to recognize such marriage in Russia.
Yes, I noticed that one of the two women mentioned that. She said that the Russian Constitution has to accept our Canadian Union. Is that because the Russian Constitution doesn't specify a man and a woman?
That's true. I mean, but it's mostly the Russian family code, which is very unclear about same-sex marriages which are signed abroad. I mean, there is a closed list of reasons for non-recognition of foreign marriages, and the same-sex nature of the marriage is not one of them. The law was passed in 1995. At this time, obviously, there were no same-sex marriages anywhere in the world. The first one appeared in Netherlands in 2001. So obviously, at this time, the legislators didn't even think that such an opportunity can arise at some point.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station.
This is the Rainbow Report.
And that was Nikolai Alexeyev, the organiser of Slavic Pride, which is scheduled to take place, despite the ban you heard about, on Saturday to coincide with the Eurovision Song Contest final. Do you think, Ben, that he stands chance of getting lots of publicity out of this with everybody being in town for Eurovision?
Oh, I think publicity-wise, it's an absolute goldmine. And I think as well that it makes us think here in Australia and here in Melbourne how lucky we are, although there's a way to come. I mean, thinking of the hardship and the hard work that's got to happen over there to get something like this off the ground, it really really brings you back to earth and say, well, hang on a second, we're doing okay down here.
Yeah, we are rather lucky, aren't we, Claudia?
Oh, absolutely. I think that is true. You suddenly kind of sit there and go, you know, there's a lot of people around the world that are still fighting so hard for things that we take for granted.
Yeah.
I'd like to see, I mean, I'm a great believer in, you know, symbolic acts, and I guess I'd like to see some of our celebrations, Midsummer and Pride March, you know, like put aside some time or perhaps, you know, spare a thought for you know, the gay men and women in Russia that are fighting it tough just to be who they are. I mean, it's, you know, it's not all like it is here in Australia. And I just think I'd like to see that connection made with our celebration. I don't know how you do it, you know, a party or without it becoming too heavy, but just a little something to say, well, hey guys, we know about you and what you're going through.
Some kind of Russian-themed event or something.
Yeah, because it's all about a awareness raising, isn't it?
Yes.
She says,
yes.
Trying to get her words around those big... Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, so a little Slavic event could be nice.
Yes, I can just see you in, you know, knee-length red leather boots.
We could do the Three Sisters. I get to pay the whole lot. Pretty fabulous. I've always wanted to do Chekhov.
Well, I think that would be great.
Antelivania.
Okay, well, we're going to take a short break there. Now, we're going to hear some more from Nikolai, and in fact, he's going to tell us a bit more about the current situation for gays and lesbians in Russia and what his organisation's managed to achieve. This is Doug Pollard with the Rainbow Report on Joy 94.9.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station.
Informing, entertaining and provoking, this is The Rainbow Report.
Welcome back, and before the break there, you just got a quick snatch, if you pardon the expression, of the Finnish Eurovision entry, Lose Control by Waldo's People. A little earlier on, we were talking about possible names for a Melbourne gay rugby team. Claudia just came up with one she thought we might borrow from somebody else. What was that?
That was Scorgasms.
I rather like that.
Do like that.
How about the Scorgasms, yes. And we've had one suggestion in here from Mark, the Melbourne Lineouts. Kind of.
For those of you who aren't familiar with rugby, lineouts is when the men are lifted in the up off the ground by their shorts and the ball is thrown up. That's called a lineout.
Yes,
that's and hence where the term comes from.
I can't. It's so confusing.
That's the rugby
me.
Version of a wedgie.
That's right.
Just call it the wedgies.
The wedgie. Well, there's another option.
The wedgies.
The Melbourne
yes.
wedges.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, that's funny.
Yes, I once
that's
saw,
got double meaning. I like that.
That's a nice one. Yes, yes. I once saw a very nice bumper sticker that said, "Rugby men do it with leather balls." So the leather balls might be quite a nice one. There was another one that said elliptical leather balls, but that was a bit too long for my bumper. Now, you're listening to The Rainbow Report on Joy 94.9, and we have been talking with the Russian gay rights leader Nikolai Alexeyev in Moscow. We in the West have little idea about how difficult it is for gays and lesbians in Russia, so I ask Nikolai to paint a picture of what the situation is like.
It's quite complicated, and the difference between Moscow, St. Petersburg on the one side and all the rest of the country is enormous, because here at least we have some clubs, bars, and some gay venues, but obviously anywhere else in the country people have to be absolutely, they can't go anywhere to entertain, they don't have any way to express themselves, and so on. So the different situation all around the country and the major two cities. But even here, I mean, the open expression of same-sex love is very, very difficult, and the authorities are very hostile towards homosexual people.
Is there a problem with street violence against you, for example?
It happens when people are going out of the clubs and people can be waiting for them to beat them and so on. It happens quite often.
Because you've run into trouble, but that's been mainly with the authorities.
I have a lot of problems with the authorities, and that's why I'm one of the main enemies of the Moscow mayor, and and obviously, for the last 4 years, we absolutely spoiled his international reputation. No one wants to meet him anymore abroad, and he never goes to meet it now with the mayors of the major European cities.
Yeah, but it's not illegal to be gay in Russia, is it?
No, not of course. First of all, there is no criminal prosecution. It's not considered even as a mental disorder according to the Russian classification of mental illnesses. So now they're saying that it's immoral, that we have to follow what the Russian Orthodox Church is saying, and the Russian Orthodox Church is saying that it's a sin which cannot be demonstrated.
You yourself have achieved quite a lot in the last 4 years. I mean, you have come to international attention. You have staged these parades, however difficult it's been several times. You've brought the whole issue to the attention of the European Parliament. I mean, you are beginning to make some progress, aren't you?
Well, I think that what was done in the last 4 years is really unbelievable, because we couldn't imagine in 2005 when we started our organization, and we achieved, first of all, the lifting of the ban on blood donations by homosexual people, which was done a year ago. We managed to raise the topic of the freedom of assembly and freedom of expression of gay people on the very highest level, and we managed to take all our cases to the European Court of Human Rights, where they are pending now. We have 170 denials of different public actions. It doesn't only concern the pride, it concerns any public action of sexual minorities, even with the participation of 10 people, like a small human rights protest. So everything is banned, not a single one was authorized, and all the cases went to the European Court. This is a very good achievement, because we are waiting, and at some point there will be a decision which will be obligatory for the Russian authorities authorities to follow. We managed finally to bring the topic on a very high level on the in the Russian media and the international media. Until 2005, no one was talking seriously about sexual minorities. Now there is many media talking about it, and it's like a topic where taboo does not exist anymore.
That's very good. And it really only takes a few people, really, to be visible and to insist on their rights for things to start happening. But, of course, in your situation, it's very tough to be visible. I'm reading in one of the websites I looked at today that the police are considering arresting you and some of your colleagues ahead of the weekend to stop you doing your parade. Do you think that's likely?
I think there is a very big chance that it might be an option for the authorities to move forward, but I don't think that by doing this they will solve the problem of what can happen on the 16th. The people will still go on the streets, whether with me or without me, but of course we will do everything with all the preventive measures to avoid being arrested before the event.
I'll bet you will. I hope you've got plenty of places to stay.
Yeah, well, plenty of places to stay, but we have to change the mobile phones every day because you can very easily be tracked by the mobile phone.
Of course you can, yeah. And it's quite amazing to us in a Western country to think that people still have to take these kind of measures in order to survive, in order to make their presence known. You know.
Well, it's amazing because we're in the 21st century. Mm. In a quite open country and which positions itself as a democratic country. And in this situation, we have, like in other countries, there are carnivals, there are celebrations, there are fun on the streets. And what we have here is a sort of a military operation when we have to organize everything under very big secrecy.
What about, and I know you've made an enemy of the mayor of Moscow, but how about Vladimir Putin? Do you know what his attitude is?
Well, he said about this once in his when he was a president, and he said a very strange thing about in 2007. He didn't clearly answer the question what is his attitude towards the gay parades, but at least he expressed himself for the first time ever. But we don't know what is his position, and we don't know the position of the current president, Dmitry Medvedev, whom we sent a letter asking him to interfere in this situation with the Moscow mayor, and we didn't get any reply as of now.
No, well, the general press we get here in Australia is that Medvedev is pretty much Putin's creature and will only do what Putin lets him do.
I think it's partly true, but it's not true, maybe 100% true on this particular topic. I think that if he wants to take his own decision on this issue, he would be able to do it.
Well, let's hope he does. We've talked about a little bit about the fact that, you know, there'll be people on the streets wanting to attack any gay participants. What about the police? Do they protect you?
No, they never protected us in the last years since we organized it, and they always arrest everyone, both sides of the event, us as the demonstrators, peaceful demonstrators, and those people who are coming to beat us on the streets. So they are very violently oppressing the what is going on because it's not officially permitted by the authorities.
I mean, I would have thought that they would have some kind of mandate, though, as police to maintain public order and therefore prevent violence happening. Are you saying they don't do that?
Well, that's what they're doing. They're arresting everyone, putting them in the cars and taking them to the police station.
They allow you to be beaten first, though, don't they? They stand aside.
Some people are being beaten before and after that being arrested. And not a single accident during the Pride in the last 3 years was investigated by the authorities. The German deputy, Volker Beck, was beaten in 2006. Everyone saw his attacker and no one investigated anything. Peter Tetchel was beaten in 2007. Everyone saw who beat him, and all the videos are at our possession, and the police said that we can't find him. So no one wants to investigate any violence against us.
That's a very tough situation to be in. Well, the best of luck with everything over this weekend. I Keep my fingers crossed that you come through this safely. You're in a very good position because with so much of the foreign media in Moscow at the moment, I think it will be difficult for the authorities to evade scrutiny, which is a good thing. Thank you very much for talking to us, Nikolai. And as I said, the best of luck with it all. And I hope at least some of the people on in Eurovision wear pride badges or something for you at the weekend. That was Nikolai Alexeyev of Slavic Pride. I find that amazing, having to change mobile phone every day because the police use it to track you. What a world. Anyway, fingers crossed that Nikolai and his friends and supporters will be safe on Saturday. There is a campaign among gays and lesbians worldwide asking Eurovision to allow performers and audience members to wear gay pride symbols in support of Russian gays and lesbians, and to cancel the broadcast if there is violence in the streets against them on Saturday. If you'd like to join in this campaign, I've put the addresses at Eurovision you need to write to on the web at www.rainbowreporter.com. Anyway, now it's time for a second look at rugby as Kay Sarah appears beneath her latest creation, a bonnet that looks suspiciously like an outsized jockstrap with bows on it.
Oh. Thank you, lovely Doug. And I was waiting for my music cue. Yes, it has been a sporty week. The NRL and their dirty secrets are in the headlines, and I spent just a little bit of time reflecting on the burly blokes that chase the balls around the field. Or the ball. I think there's only one. I can't remember. Anyway, bless their smelly jocks. When I say reflecting, I speak exclusively as an outsider. I have absolutely no interest in playing sport myself. Past experience has left me in no doubt as to my skill with a ball. The whole eye-hand coordination thing has always eluded me, and then there is the whole brute force thing that comes into play with contact sports, and well, please, I'm a lady. No, I'm only too happy to watch from the sidelines, cheer them along when they do something fabulous like kick the ball, and pervert their cute little bits and pieces squeezed into their cute little footy gear, and bitch about the umpire's decision, especially when it rules against my team. What are you, you stupid? That's where you add in all the expletives and blah, 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 blah. My love of footy goes back yonks to my ragamuffin days in eucalypt-stained Beechworth. My dad, the venerable Mr. Sarah, was a star player in the local football team, the Beechworth Bombers, who curiously wear the same colours as their big brother Essendon, albeit with the stripe across the opposite shoulder, which always bothered me. Anyway, Dad was captain of the team and later umpire and then president, so it really is, as you see, royalty, especially for a small country town like Beechworth. You see, in the bush, the local footy team is the heart of the community, and footy season is a real family affair. I have many a fond memory of local meets. Back then, the cars parked right up to the fence rail, within spitting distance of the boundary line. Families by the hundreds would arrive early and decamp with their eskies and picnic hampers, staking out their turf with fold-up camp chairs and rugs. It was very, very exciting. And once the match was underway, you'd perch yourself on the car bonnet with a soggy pie in one hand and a wad of streamers in the other and cheer and wave and all that. And then when your team scored a goal, you'd reach in and give the cow horn a good blast. And it was all very, very exciting. As you can imagine, that part was particularly thrilling, especially when they won the game. You get to run out onto the field, and I've lost my place, but I'm making it up as we go, and you'd get to mingle with the sweaty, mud-soaked footy players. Stay with me, folks. These fellas were local heroes. They were built like a brick dunny, powerful legs and arms, lean and fit from the chase, weather-beaten but not worn. You could get right up close and smell the rubbing oil and the sweat. Their youth and prowess was on show for the whole community to celebrate, and celebrate we all did. The footballers' parties were notorious. All about beer and bonding and shenanigans that extended way into the wee hours. Yet, and here's the important thing, even with all the grog and the rowdy, blokey behaviour, there were distinct social boundaries. Pardon the pun. And God help the player that crossed these. You see, the local football team carried the aspirations of the whole town, and the players who were part of the community had to answer to the community. There was nowhere to hide. Now, I realise this all sounds terribly romantic. Childhood memories are like that. But way back in Beechworth, overwhelmingly, there seemed to be a magic and a sense of occasion around an innocent game of footy. Alas, it's not so today. The AFL and its interstate brother, the NRL, are both very different beasts today. There's more at stake for starters. Big money fueling big egos. Any wonder the game has lost its way. Now, my simple point here is that I love footy. I love to watch the boys chase that silly ball around the field. I love the thrill of the win. And I love the fact that when I go to footy here in Melbourne, I see clusters of poofs and dykes tucked up in scarves and hats, cheering along with their team. But right now, I wonder whether the NRL revelations this week are just the tip of the iceberg. We know of drug and anger management issues in AFL, so what else is there? So now is the time for the players to come clean. If you're decent blokes, unite against the thugs in your code. If you love the game as much as me and the thousands of fans, name them and shame them. There is no other way forward. I'm Kay Sarar, and thank you for indulging me, and I'm afraid there are no jokes in this week's bonnet. It was so long!
I noticed you said it was very uncamp, and you know, you said they all decamped the football ground and they brought out their camp chairs, so it got it slipped in there somewhere.
I guess the thing is, I just think that you know, I mean, the whole NRL thing is really just appalling, but I would hate to see the whole of the game, NRL or AFL, all tarnished with the one brush, you know, because, I mean, I'm just a big old romantic, but I think there must be some decent fellas in there, and, you know, I think it's time for them to stand up now and actually demand the standards in the games.
You know, Ben.
The gentlemen are there. The gentlemen are here, and you're sitting with one right now.
There you go.
I mentioned you mentioned NRL and you mentioned AFL. You didn't mention rugby union, and I think that's what you missed. I think that's where the gentlemen are. I think if you come along on a Saturday afternoon, I'm sure I can show you the ropes, Kay, and there'll be something in it for everyone.
Well, there used to be an old joke that, what was it? Rugby union was a game for gentlemen played by thugs, and rugby league was the other way around.
I think it's okay to be, you know, like a meathead. And it's okay not to be a Nobel Prize winner or an intellectual. Like, it's okay to not have any brains and to run and chase a ball around the field.
As long as you're good at it.
Well, I just think that's fine. But, you know, the bottom line is, and really it is the bottom line, is that there are parameters. And we live in a civilised society, and the kind of behaviour that's come out of the NRL is just not civilised.
It's a shame that the events of recent news have ended up in the media, as opposed to the triumphs and the failures on the field. We're hearing about sex scandals and all these sort of things, and that's the problem with where football in Australia is going at the moment, where it's all about advertising, it's all about television, and it's all about the off-field antics. And you see it here in Melbourne, you see the whole Cousins fiasco. Let's hear about the real footy.
It becomes all about celebrity rather than being about the sport, which is I think, the problem.
Which is why it discourages people who aren't competing at that elite level to get involved in the game, because they don't see the true nature of the game.
Yeah.
Well, Queer Sports Alliance Melbourne, which I have no doubt you're very well aware of.
I am.
I mean, their whole ethos is it doesn't matter if you're not much good, so long as you join in.
Yeah,
you know,
we can
cope with every level. I mean, the reason I've never played rugby since school was because I was forced to, and I hated every minute of it because I was forced to.
Yeah.
You know, and
you can watch.
And if
I think
you weren't any good
point.
At it, you like, were made to feel very, right. very small. Indeed.
Yeah, you have to have spectators. I think that's the point too. Like, it's okay to just watch.
That's it. And I think rugby and any sport is more than just the sport that's played.
I ain't getting out there, no way, Jose.
You could be the orange lady. You could be the orange lady.
You could.
Well, you could rush out and do the first bounce or the first kick or whatever they do.
There's always a spot for the halftime entertainers, I think, as well.
I would always run in the opposite direction when the ball came my way at school. It's a very scary thing.
You could pick up the pom-poms and do a bit of cheerleading and half-time.
I don't know about the cheerleading thing.
Yes, Kay doesn't really dance, does she?
No, I just think that's also part of the problem. I think that was actually raised in the Herald Sun. Actually, in the front, did anyone read the story on the front of MX? Oh my gosh, it's full on about the whole NRL thing. Very damning of the whole culture. And it names cheerleaders and says that it's all part and parcel of this one thing about, you know, sort of sexually objectifying the whole thing.
But I don't know if you saw the Four Corners program, but there was one piece in there that was quite interesting, and that was the business where they showed the footy players this film about a guy getting drunk and getting raped.
Yes.
And that's supposed to deter them from... I mean, it's an interesting concept, isn't
it? You know, and saying, well, you know, if it's all right to go out and pack rape a woman because she's drunk, why isn't it all right to go out and pack rape a man? I think they may have been giving something of a mixed message.
Yes.
Look, I think to all those sports executives out there, let's focus on the game, let's focus on the football, and keep the boys' minds off anything else they might be doing off the field. Keep them busy throwing the ball
around.
Yes,
and let's can all this stuff about role models. I mean, please, I get so sick of hearing footballers being interviewed because 99.9% of them have nothing whatever to say. say.
But they are role models. I mean, they okay, you might not like it, but, you know, young kids look up to these burly blokes that that score goals. I don't understand it myself, you know, but they do, you know. It's like you go to the AFL and it's full of families, so... Given the fact that they are in that position, they need to sort of be a little bit more responsible, I reckon, about what who and what they are.
Yeah. Well, we've certainly knocked that one on the head. Well, I think we're going to say that's it for another week there. My guests tonight were rugby enthusiast Ben Lankin, the slightly less enthusiastic Kay Sirar. Well, certainly from the sidelines.
What are you saying?
Anyway.
I love Eurovision and football. What's the problem?
I just can't see you in the middle of a scrum somehow. Actually, I think there's another reason why I didn't like playing rugby, because I was always very short when I was at school. I grew after I left, so I was always the hooker, and I objected to being called the hooker.
You were the hooker? hubba, hubba.
Our other guest tonight, Jenny Telford, Director of Census Products and Services at the Australian Bureau of Statistics, Claudia Larson from Evolution Publishing, and, of course, our extended interview with Nikolai Alexeyev from Moscow. We wish him good luck for Saturday. Don't forget to write to Eurovision asking them to allow performers and audience members to wear the gay pride symbols and to cancel the broadcast if there is violence against gays and lesbians on Saturday. The addresses are on the web at www.rainbowreporter.com, and I'll put Ben's details up there as
Thank
well.
Thank you very much. That's melbournegayrugby@gmail.com.
Yes. Producer tonight, Bianca Johnston. Technical production by Michael Bayliss. I'm Dog Pollard. Cathy Anderson will be in this seat for the next 2 weeks while I go off and sun myself in Queensland. I'll see you back in 3 weeks' time with another edition of The Rainbow Report.
This has been a Joy 94.9 News and Current Affairs presentation.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.